My life's in you, my strength's in you, my hope's in you, in you.
This is a presentation of the Durham Church of Christ in Durham, North Carolina. We are located at 5224 Wake Forest Highway. If you are ever in the Durham area, we hope that you will come by and visit.
We had an excellent VBS, and we got to spend some good time with some brethren from out of town. I'm so thankful that they were able to come, and I don't know about you, but I feel closer to them and definitely feel as though they are a part of our family. Of course they are, because they are children of God, but now that we've got to know them a little better and work with them some, it feels like that's the case even more so. I'm so thankful for all the work that they did and thankful for all the classes that was taught. The adult class was just excellent. Brother Clay did a great, great job. And after sitting at his feet and listening to him, it makes me wonder, can I still preach? Am I still able to do this? I was thankful for the time off and to be able to listen, because you know preachers need to be preached to as well. And so I enjoyed that, but it's good to be mounted on the pulpit once again before you brethren. We knocked nearly 2,000 doors, and we had great turnout. We had many visitors, some of which are with us today after our door-knocking efforts, and we're certainly thankful for their presence. We had numerous Bible studies throughout the month, and so we are moving forward and progressing in doing the work of the Lord and being sound in His doctrine and declaring it throughout this community. So I commend you, brethren. And I enjoyed the topic, which was a study of the parables. We looked at the Good Samaritan, we looked at the lost son, we looked at the unforgiving servant, and we looked at the parable of the sower. And we're going to kind of continue on with that theme this morning as we ask ourselves the question, why did Jesus teach using parables? You know, I remember a few years ago when our niece came to me. And she wanted me to help her understand, she's about 10 or so at this time, what the word irony means. She wanted to know, Uncle Sean, what does irony mean? Well, as you may know, those of you who have children or nieces or nephews who ask these kinds of questions, it is a challenge to teach the intangible to those who really don't understand the intangible yet. And so I struggled. I fumbled with my words, and I attempted to explain it to her. And you can ask Hannah, I did a poor job, and she didn't understand it at all. And that's really a mark of a true genius, which I am not, which is the ability to explain the intangible, the very difficult, the very complex, and put it in a way that is so simple, so easy for all men to understand. And that's what Jesus did. It's been said before that parables are taking heavenly truths and applying them to a worldly or earthly context so that they can be understood. That's what Jesus was doing when he was teaching in parables. He was explaining the spiritual by using the physical. But likewise, he expounded upon those that were listening the very meaning that is found in spirituality. You know, I'm an Auburn Tiger fan. I can say that here because we're not in Alabama, and I'm not going to get jumped when we walk out the door. But Auburn, Alabama, the Auburn Tigers, they have a saying that's known as War Eagle. And they will say that to one another because they're all Auburn fans, and they all know what that means. Well, to the Alabama fans and the rest of the world that don't like Auburn, that doesn't make any sense to them because they're the Auburn Tigers. They're not the Eagles. And so there's no meaning there. They think it's a big joke, and they poke fun at them about this. But to those who are the fans of the Auburn Tigers, it has meaning to it. There's a meaning behind the term War Eagle. Well, the same is true with parables. Not only do parables take the intangible, the spiritual, and explain it by using the physical, that which man can understand, but it also takes something that may not have any meaning for someone else, but may indeed have meaning for those who are looking for meaning. You might know of folks who look for sentimental value in almost anything. They maybe pass a beautiful tree on the side of the road, and all of a sudden they start thinking of all these sentimental thoughts and values of that tree. They see meaning in something just very simple. Well, that's what parables are. Jesus is teaching parables to try to show those who are looking for spiritual meaning in the physical application of heavenly truths. And so let us examine the explanation that Jesus gives as to why he taught using parables. If you have your Bible, turn with me to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13, after Jesus gives the parable of the sower in verses 3 through 8. And then verse 9, he says, "Who hath ears to hear, let him hear." We learn in verse 10 that the disciples come to him and they say, "Why speakest thou unto them in parables?" He answered and said unto them, "Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given." Let's stop right there for just a moment. The apostles come to Jesus in private, as we'll learn through other accounts of this in various other gospel accounts. And they want to know, "Why, Jesus, are you teaching the people using parables?" And Jesus explains, "Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven." Well, some folks will take that this phrase, this passage right here, means that the apostles somehow had either miraculous or a special knowledge of the kingdom of heaven. That because the apostles had this special knowledge, that Jesus then had to use parables to the other people who were not spending as much time with Jesus as the apostles were. But we know that this isn't the case. Because as we look on throughout this chapter, not only does Jesus have to explain the parable of the sower to his apostles in verses 18 through 23, but then they come to him again later on in the chapter in verse 36, and they ask him to declare unto them the parable of the tares of the field, and then he does so, verses 37 through 43. So even the apostles did not understand the exact meaning behind the parables. And so Jesus is not saying here in verse 11, "Well, you apostles, you already know the mysteries of the kingdom. It's already been given to you. You already know that. And so I'm just using parables to teach these other folks." That's not what's being said at all. So what is the you? Who does the you represent? Well, we understand what it represents when we go to verse 16. He says, "Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For verily I say unto you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which ye see and have not seen, and to hear those things which ye hear and have not heard." What's the point? The point is, those, the you in verse 11, refers to those who have ears. It refers to those who have eyes. Now, most all men have ears and eyes, so clearly Jesus isn't saying the folks that have ears and eyes understand what I'm saying. No. He's saying those that want to have an ear as to what the gospel means, those who want to have an ear in regards to what are the mysteries of the kingdom, they're going to hear what I'm saying. They're going to understand the comparison that's being made. They're going to, if they don't understand, they're going to seek to find out what it means. Which he tells us in Matthew chapter 7, starting at verse 7, "If we seek, we will find. If we knock, it will be opened unto you. If we ask, it will be given unto us." And so the apostles are included then in this context of the you as to those who are wanting to follow Jesus. Those who want to know truth. In John chapter 7 and verse 17, Jesus says, "If any man will to do his will, he shall know of the doctrine." If any man desires to know God's will, he's going to know what it is. Those who are seeking after Jesus, seeking to sit at the feet of Jesus, to learn about Jesus and about spiritual truths, they're going to understand these parables. And if they don't understand, they're going to ask and it's going to be answered. If they don't understand, they're going to seek and they're going to find. If they don't understand, they're going to knock and it's going to be opened. They will comprehend. But then he goes on and he says, "But to them it is not given." Who is the them? Again, some say the them is the crowd of people that he's telling the parables to. Well, that's not the case at all, because when we drop down to verse 13, he says, therefore speak I to them in parables. Why? Because they seeing, see not, and hearing, they hear not. Do you notice the comparison? The other folks, they saw and they actually saw. They heard with their ears and they actually heard. These folks are the other way around. They're seeing, but they don't see. They're hearing, but they don't hear. And then he goes on and he says, because this is being fulfilled, the prophecy that Isaiah gave, by hearing ye shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing ye shall see and shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing. Now here's the question. Can they not hear, that is, understand and comprehend these parables? Because Jesus just chose and God chose that certain folks are going to get what I'm saying and certain folks are not going to get what I'm saying. Is that the reason? Does God place it upon men as to whether or not they are able to comprehend? No, not at all. Jesus even explains this to us further. There in verse 15. Their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes. Folks, you may have figured this out by now, but there are some who just do not want to know truth. It doesn't matter if truth was told to them in every language they understand. It doesn't matter if truth was told to them via every way of publication that is possible, through internet, through print, through advertisements, through video, through audio. It doesn't make a difference. Some folks just don't want to know the truth. Why? They want to be justified in their own actions. They want to be justified in their own life, doing things their own way, just like the Pharisees, which Jesus is, of course, referring to them in this passage. If we go back to chapter 12, we notice that the Pharisees, they were after Jesus. They come to Jesus after Jesus comes to the synagogue in Matthew 12 and verse 9. And there's a man that had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day, that they may accuse him? They're looking to charge the Son of God. They're wanting to criticize him, regardless of whether or not he has the power to heal a man. They want to know where they are right and where he is wrong, because they want to continue to live in their own sin. And then Jesus explains down in verse 13, as he talks to the man, he says, stretch forth thine hand, and heals him, after explaining the need to do good on the Sabbath day. They were worshiping the Sabbath day. They were worshiping their own standard of righteousness rather than worshiping the Lord of the Sabbath day. But notice verse 14. The Pharisees then go out and they hold counsel against him, how they might destroy him. Then we see in verse 38 that certain scribes and Pharisees answer and come to him, Master, we would see a sign from thee. What do they want him to do? Jesus, can you prove to us that you're the Son of God? Go ahead, prove it to us. Do something that makes us realize that you're different from any other man. Well, he just did. And it was on the Sabbath day. He healed a man, but they didn't like it. They didn't like it so much that they accuse him of being from Satan, starting at verse 22 through 24. And now they're coming to him and they're wanting another sign. Do they want another sign so that they can say, let's see, if he really does a miracle, then I'm going to know he's the Son of God? No, they've already seen a miracle. Why do they want another sign? So they can accuse him even further. And so they can seek to justify themselves even further in their own standard of righteousness. They want to hear words to bolster themselves. They want to hear words so that they can find justification in their own lives without having to make any changes. And see, Jesus is going to explain, as he explains why he's teaching in parables, that those who seek spirituality, those who seek to keep the commandments of God, which is what spirituality is, 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 37. As they hear parables, as they hear those things that are mysterious, they're going to investigate further and they're going to grow further in their understanding of God and of heavenly truths. But those that want nothing to do with spirituality, the commandments of God, again, 1 Corinthians 14, verse 37. Those that want nothing to do with being right in their standing with God are going to, as they hear these parables, decrease in their spirituality. They're going to go farther away from God. They're going to become even harder, even more adamant about doing things their own way. And that's what he explains to us there in verse 12. Notice what he says in Matthew 13. For whosoever hath to him, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken away, even that he hath. Those who are seeking to be right with God as they hear the truths of God presented are going to grow even further and even more deeply intimate with God. But those that have already made up their mind, they want nothing to do with God, these parables are going to drive them even further away from God. Why? Because it causes them to assent to truth prior to them recognizing the spiritual application. What do I mean by that? Well, take, for example, Nathan, when he came to David, after David had committed adultery, and he told him the parable of the ewe lamb. And David agrees with Nathan that that man, that rich man that took away that poor man's ewe lamb, he ought to be killed. David already assented unto truth. He already agreed that that which that rich man did was unjust, and he then is deserving of death. Likewise, the parables that Jesus gives, such as the Good Samaritan, that lawyer is going to agree, well, the neighbor is the one that helped out the man that was beaten up on the side of the road, left half dead. He's now convicted himself and made himself guilty of his own attempt to justify himself. So he has two options. He either then can make a change, or he's going to grow even harder and even more adamant against doing the will of God. Which is exactly what the Pharisees did, isn't it? Jesus did more and more good works. And as he did them, they became more and more adamant about silencing him. They left. They were decreasing. They were hardening their hearts. And so what can we learn then from the approach that Jesus took in using parables? We can learn many things. Number one, we can learn that we're going to beat our head up against a brick wall trying to explain to those the truths of God who have already made up their mind. They're not going to do any of what God has to say regarding the topic being discussed. Jesus did not waste his time with those who wanted nothing to do with him. He told them how it was, and he went on. The apostles came to him at one point and they said, "Do you not know that you've offended the Pharisees?" He says, leave them alone. Let the blind lead the blind. They'll both fall into a ditch. Stop worrying about them. And so we can learn from parables in that we are not going to be able to teach every person the gospel because there are some who have just simply made up their mind they're not going to do it. And so we're better off utilizing our time and our efforts toward those who might be interested in the gospel. How do we know if someone's interested? If they're interested in spiritual things. You know, we knock doors sometimes. Some folks curse at the door and slam it in your face. Well, let me ask you a question. Are they interested in spiritual things? No. Other folks, they want to start up a conversation. That might be a red flag. Maybe they're interested in spiritual things. Maybe they have ears to hear. Second thing we can learn about parables. Parables can assist us as we seek to show others how they're wrong. We've discussed it before. No one wants to wake up in the morning and say, "I'm wrong today, and I want to be wrong today, and I love being wrong today." Doesn't happen. None of us do that. But if we can cause folks to realize a certain scenario that has really not a whole lot to do initially with their spirituality, get them to embrace and accept that as being true, and then make the application to the spiritual, then we're doing exactly what Jesus did. And then the ball's in their court. Because see, no one's going to disagree with the parable of the sower. It's a fact. When a farmer goes to sow, this is the type of ground that he's going to sow upon. And so there's no disagreement there. The disagreement comes when then folks realize, oh, I'm that kind of ground. But then the ball's in their court. And so parables can assist us as we seek to teach others and convict them of their wrongdoing. Number three, parables can help build up the faith of the faithful. I don't know about you, but I haven't been in the church very long. I've heard the parable of the Good Samaritan many times, parable of the unforgiving servant many times, parable of the lost son many times. I've heard these parables many times. I've only been in the church 6 years. Some of you, I'm sure, have heard it for years and even decades maybe. But I'm willing to guess that all those who are faithful, if they were to be interviewed this morning, would agree that they learned a lot last week. Things that they never even thought of. Parables help build the faith of the faithful. And that's what Jesus is talking about there in verse 12. You know, when someone wants to be added to a family, generally there's a certain process that must occur. Take, for example, maybe an adoption or even a birth. Or even a wedding. If someone wants to be added to a family, there are certain arrangements that take place. There are certain beliefs and agreements that have to be made. And then there's a ceremony that occurs, at which point it is then finalized that the person wanting to be a member of the family is now a member of the family. We understand this to be true. Well, we also understand that the church is God's family, as we read in the book of Ephesians. And God's family desires all men to be saved and to become a part of that family. Because God desires all men to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 4. However, just as the world understands, in order for someone to become a member of a family, certain ceremonies are required, certain agreements are required, certain beliefs and attributes are necessary in order for that to happen. Likewise, the family of God, God being the head of that family, has certain requirements and a certain ceremony at which it is then possible for someone to become a member of His family. What are those requirements? Well, God's not going to let anyone be a member of His family who does not believe in His Son, Jesus Christ, that He is God. John 8, verse 24. God's not going to allow anyone to be a member of His family who is not willing to change his mind to do the will of God. Acts chapter 2 and verse 38. Repent. God is not going to allow anyone to be a member of His family who is not willing to confess that Jesus Christ is the Son of God based upon their belief. Acts 8 and verse 37. And lastly, God does not allow anyone to become a member of His family until they have been baptized into Christ for the remission of their sins. Galatians 3, 26 and 27 and Acts 22 and verse 16. We understand in the world today that ceremonies, agreements, beliefs, attributes are required before someone can actually become a member of another person's family. How is it any different with God? The answer is, it's not. He has certain requirements. They've been laid out for us this morning. The question is, are you a member of His family? Have you been baptized into Christ? Not sprinkled, immersed. Based upon your belief, based upon your confession, just as we read about in the Bible, in order to become a member of His family. If you haven't, you have the opportunity to do so this morning, and we hope that you would. Please come forward as all together we stand and sing.